Welcome to the TechCast. I'm producer Becca Refford. The TechCast is sponsored by Chariot Solutions, a full-stack application development consultancy committed to building high-quality software solutions. With expertise in Java 8, Scala, Clojure, Spring, iOS, Android, AngularJS, and other open-source technologies, we can bring the right blend of expertise and technology to bear for your organization. Visit us on the web at chariotsolutions.com. Chariot Solutions offers consulting, mentoring, and training in open source languages, platforms, and frameworks, such as JavaScript language fundamentals, testing, and build tools, Angular 1 and Angular 2, Scala, and Akka. We're offering a special for our podcast listeners on the first Angular 2 course we have to offer. Join us for the first beta of our Angular 2 training class on May 24th to 26th and save $100 on your ticket with the discount code of TechCast, all one word, lowercase.
All right, Sujan, so ETE is all wrapped up and, you know, we've all kind of gotten our sleep. And
I'm so sad because now every time ETE ends, I realize I have to face reality again.
Back to writing code. Yeah. So we had three podcasts around the Scala universe, right? So let's focus in on one of those. You had Heather Miller. What's her role in the Scala world?
So she's been working on Scala as a language, the compiler, for a number of years. She was a student under Martin Odersky, mm-hmm. doing her PhD, so she's had a lot of impact into the actual core language and the type system. And her now new role is executive director of the Scala Center, and she's still part of the EPFL, which is the school that Martin and them are part of, the
right.
university where they do. She's a research scientist there, rather, I should say. She spoke on. Her title was talk title was Academies to English, A Practical Tour of Scala's Type System, which was a really well-received talk. If you're interested in the talk, there's going to be recordings, right? We're going to be posting
Yeah, we're going to put it up online.
And
yeah,
she absolutely. Has posted the slide deck herself on speakerdeck.com.
Oh,
so
good.
It's already
okay.
there. So if people want to look at that, you can just look up her name, and then all her actual talks are up there.
Yeah, we'll put a link up on the show notes too. And so she was really interesting. I hear that the talk did go over very well, and it kind of tried to demystify and maybe simplify the conversation around advanced Scala usages versus what people use in the real world, right?
Right, yeah. So it went over a lot of the different parts of the type system, some of the more basic stuff, and then some of the scarier stuff for people, but tried to explain it with simple examples and saying, like, okay, you don't really need much more than this to be a great Scala programmer. You don't need to do a lot of the fancy type acrobatics and abstract stuff with macros and type level programming and higher kind of types and all that stuff. Like, it's good if you know that and you can write some wicked cool stuff with it. And there's some great frameworks that take advantage of it that you can use as a developer, but you yourself don't need to be an expert at that. You can be a very good Scala developer just knowing the basics.
Yeah. And so this interview is going to be us asking her about the talk and about her work at the Scala Center, and I think you'll really enjoy it. So up next is our podcast with Heather Miller.
Hi, I'm Sujan, and today we're going to be talking with Heather Miller from the new Scala Center, and we're so glad you could make it to ETE. We absolutely loved your talk yesterday, and we hope you're enjoying ETE as well and had time to attend some of the talks, and I guess we'll start off with questions. So could you tell us a few words about your new role as executive director at the Scala Center?
Sure. I mean, I think it's a fancy sounding name, but really what we're trying to do is a small group of us are trying to sort of make open source around Scala a little bit better and also do sort of educational things in and around Scala. So as executive director, I'm just trying to sort of, form where we're going with all of this. And I'm actually getting down and working on stuff. I'm not just, sitting in an office, like, pointing at people saying, hey, do this or do that. Because we're not like a big organization. We're not a big operation. We're only, at the moment, probably around three people. So we're hoping to grow a little bit, but we're not ever going to be a big organization because we're basically a software foundation. We're funded by donations and sort of any sort of educational income that we can ever get. But we don't do contracting, we don't do consulting, we don't do anything that turns a profit. We're strictly not for profit, which means we're always going to be a small group of people with a few foci, basically. And these foci are always directly related to open source activities, trying to grow the Scala ecosystem and make it healthier and, work on educational sort of ventures in Scala.
Okay. That's awesome. So the way I interpret that is, especially with the nonprofit aspect of it, is that it's not going to have a corporate influence or guidance. It's going to be really the community and you guys.
Exactly. So, I mean, that's the whole point, is so that there's not one company or one, industry directing everything that goes into, you know, where Scala is going and what it's doing. The idea was, well, we do need money to operate. So, hey, companies that are deeply invested in Scala, throw some money into this pot so that we can hire people to do things that are good for everybody that you maybe wouldn't independently fund all by yourself. So contribute to it. Don't be the one guy behind it, but contribute to stuff that everybody could use. So one example is we're building a package manager. Everybody's laughing because every other language has one. We don't, because it was never anything that anybody would directly spend effort on or money on. And none of the PhD students were ever going to invest any time in it. So it was a major sort of hole that we're trying to fill. So things like this, where you know, one company doesn't want to throw in all of the money for it to be built, so you know, contribute to it. A group of companies can see that something gets built, and you know, the idea is that, you know, it's all based on donations, so you know, we have to be independent by construction. Like, legally by construction, we have to be fully independent from any sort of commercial entity. So very much not for profit.
Okay, so like, I guess maybe, you know, 2-year plan, or what are the main objectives, goals in the next 2 years that you guys would like to accomplish?
So it's really difficult for me to say concretely, because I can't be the one person making these decisions. The way that we're organized is that we have, you know, so all of these companies who have contributed money can make suggestions and say, look, you know, we have, I don't know, 300 Scala programmers, and you know, the biggest problem that we have is maybe documentation or something. So really, if you could invest some effort in these areas of, you know, documentation or something like this, they have the ability to say, look, these are pain points for us, and we are able to say, okay, you know, that's right. Two of the other companies who have contributed money and the community people that sit on our board have also said that this is a problem. So, you know what, we should take this suggestion and go with it. We should invest money and time in trying to fix this problem. So the way that we're organized is that we take input from community and from sort of the shareholders in, you know, Scala, and we try to direct our efforts based on their feedback. We have, you know, some goals that we would like to achieve alongside of that. So right now it's this, we're working on this package index. And then another thing that we're trying to do, and we're trying to find time to do, is separating out the standard library into something like a core and a platform. So that, because right now everything is bundled together in one distribution, and it's difficult to make changes to libraries that people use. So it's easier just to fork or make your own like clone of something, or to compete with the standard library, and it's just kind of stagnating. So we'd like to do this reorganization, and then sort of put the power in the hands of people who use these things, and to make changes and pull requests and do stuff like separate from this like locked down frozen distribution that we need to keep the compiler stable.
Okay. So that's part of like the module effort.
I guess it's similar. Yeah, I'm not sure it's exactly the same thing, because I think what the modularization effort is all about is, yes, it's about trying to say, okay, parser combinators or some whatever, just choose a library. These are things that lots of people use, or major tools in our ecosystem use. But you know, it's like locked into our distribution. It would be great if somebody else could like, you know, try to work on it a little bit. What I would like to do is make it a little bit more, I don't know, democratic. So I don't know how this is going to work, if it's going to be lots of separate modules in the same vein that the Scala team at Lightbend is pushing. But at the very least, I would like to, you know, put more control into different people's hands. So as soon as we can sort of delineate between what's core and what's platform, I want to turn over the control to as many people who need these things and use these things regularly as I can. Not just say, okay, we cut it out, but we're still the main gatekeepers for it. I want to like open it up to people so that they can kind of control where these things go, and maybe enforce some sort of way to maintain, you know, compatibility with like core and whatnot, and like to evolve these things in a certain like release cycle. I want to create that sort of process or architecture for getting these things done. But I want it very much not to be like, we are the gatekeepers and then you guys have to just deal with our decisions. I want other people to be able to make decisions as well.
Okay. And I guess for our listeners out there, you know, obviously besides just coding and contributing back to open source, how would you suggest they participate or contribute to the Scala Center?
So right now we're doing something kind of weird and interesting. I'm not sure it's going to work, but it seems to be actually working so far. We've been doing this for at least a month or two. So we have two projects right now that we're focusing on. I mentioned this package index. Another one is this this idea of like JS Fiddle, but for Scala, so Scala Fiddle. And the way that we're doing it, yeah, it's really, really...
I played around with the Scala JS version of it online.
Yeah, so we're trying to grow this into something where you can use it like JS Fiddle and be posting links on Stack Overflow, helping people, evaluating stuff.
I think it'd be great for people learning Scala that are more visual.
Yeah.
I think it could be an awesome tool.
Exactly. I mean, or just, you know, really, I think I kind of get it. Let me change it a little bit without having to create an SBT project, you know, pull in certain dependencies, whatever. I just
totally
like want to click something,
awesome.
Change it, and then run it and see if it works.
Yep.
So anyway, these are the two things that we're working on. But what's interesting about it is not that we're working on them. It's more how we're trying to do it. So as I mentioned, we can only afford a handful of people. We're a software foundation. We kind of work on donations, right? So we can't like grow a big team to build these random tools that everybody thinks are useful. So the way that we're doing it is we are putting one or two people on these things, but opening it up to people who really care about this stuff in the community. So, for example, Otto Kronz, the guy who authored Scala.js, he's the one who, I'm not Scala.js, Scala Fiddle, he's the one who's you know, kind of joined us and he's helping us. And other people in the community have also joined up on that project. And the same is true for Scala Fiddle. We have a little team of about five or six people working on it. And they're all just, there's two of us and then everybody else is just from the community who have worked on different projects. And we've made this little core team and we're, you know, organizing it very much like you would a project in a regular company where we set, you know, milestones and we are synchronizing every week in like 30-minute meetings, nothing too crazy. But we're really actually making steps this way, and the idea is to grow a little team of core contributors. So give the and also give infrastructure and sort of money to resources that you need to run these things. So we make sure all of that's in place, and we try to help direct these projects, and we contribute engineering effort as well. But we're not the only ones doing it. We're doing it with others. So when this thing is released and unveiled, and we show it off at Scala Days, you know, the hope is that we have at least, you know, five or six people that are sort of like the core contributors, and then, you know, from that we can grow a bigger community of people actually contributing fixes, and it's not all just, you know, like Otto's project, so he's got to deal with it, or so-and-so's project. It's like our project. We together have to deal with it. So if somebody wants to take it somewhere, they can go ahead and try. So the whole goal is to try and organize a little bit differently how we build projects together in our little ecosystem of projects, and to try and maybe put a little bit of like organization or scaffolding around some of these main core projects that we think would really help sort of the community and the ecosystem thrive. So we're trying to organize these things different to grow little communities of core contributors.
Okay. That's so awesome, because I feel, you know, Scala already has an amazing stack as it is, and with this effort I think it's, you know, really going to clinch its future going forward. So it's amazing that people are doing this.
Fingers crossed. <Yeah. laughs> You never know how it's going
to
go.
Yeah. So to sort of switch gears a little bit, we absolutely loved your talk yesterday and feel like, you know, the Scala community really needs more, you know, talk, you know, demystification talks, as I put it, intro-level talks. And so, like, what are, you know, in that vein and stuff, like, what are other areas of Scala that you would like to see demystified? And, you know, what are you most excited about with Scala 2.12 and beyond?
Well, Scala 2.12, to start with that, the whole SAM support stuff I'm excited the most about. But on the topic of demystifying other bits and pieces of Scala, to be honest, right now what I feel people are the most confused about, I think the type system. I think that we have this. So we have this group of people who make these really cool type level, libraries. I think they're awesome. They seem really useful for lots of, you know, interesting sort of things that are, you know, in the field of generic programming. So the cute example is the serialization example, where you can like derive stuff using types to serialize other stuff, right? So it's really beautiful and powerful and elegant, and a lot of this is inspired by languages like Haskell. But I worry sometimes a little bit that people get distracted by sort of the efforts that you know, the type level, for example, project go to try and make these things possible, and they think that, well, I should know how to do that sort of stuff too. Like, you think that is what, you know, average, standard, normal Scala developers should know and understand how to do. And I think that, I mean, you know, when you see these talks, I find them super impressive, and I'm like really struggling to understand how it even works. Like, yeah. I mean, it's not like I look at it like, oh yeah, of course.
Implicit, like, you know, I guess independently I can understand implicits, I can understand macros, but then like you sort of combine all these different concepts together and it's
things.
Like, wow.
Yeah, and then it's just a complete like mind blown, right? But I just sometimes get concerned that people think that you should just understand that and that's easy. Like I did a PhD actually in implicit type level macro craziness. Like I have a PhD in that and I'm like it confuses me constantly. So I'm what I'm trying to say is that I don't think that normal developers should be looking at this and thinking, yeah, duh, you should understand that. Absolutely not, actually. I wish that there was more stuff like that would bridge the gap to that. So I mean, we have, you know, if you look at the books, the Scala books, I mean, even Josh Soreth's great Scala, what is it? It's the Advanced Scala book, Scala in Depth. That's right. Nobody, he touches on the type system, but he doesn't like go as crazy in depth as some of these people who are building these cool libraries do, right? Mm-hmm. He's not combining crazy features, and that's in depth, right? And I think we have this skewed perception that people should be doing crazy type level stuff. I think people should be using these libraries. They should not be trying to build another Shapeless or anything like that, right? And what I would like to see, I think, in terms of demystifying, is people trying to, you know, do the middle there, like trying to explain, yeah, if you use, you know, like combining bounds and variants, like what does that get you? That's normal. Like you should maybe sometimes come across stuff like that because people need to do it sometimes. But I think that, you know, sort of this middle level stuff around the type system is kind of missing. And I think that it would be very useful to see more sort of, you know, trying to understand how different sort of more basic features interact and how to do interesting things with them rather than focusing on some of the really cool feats that the type level people have done, despite the fact that, you know, they're really awesome and you should use what they've done, but you shouldn't try to also do it yourself. I think we need to focus a little bit more moderately.
So on that vein of, you know, PhD and stuff, I have to ask, you know, about compiler error messages. I feel like sometimes I need a PhD to understand them. Yeah. Are there things being done to, that's a tough problem. You can't just say, oh, make them easier to understand. That's not easy because you'd have to like, it's like you have to extract more information than's available to make them easier to understand. But is there anything that can be done around that?
Well, there was this, so it's a good point, and I sadly don't have a good answer for you. So there was this project that was attempting to provide better error messages or help people like navigate to the right place that caused a certain error due to
the Clippy thing.
Well, actually, no. I think we made a joke about there should be a Clippy.
Oh, okay.
But it was really just, you know, a command line thing where it was like, because most of these issues come from local type inference, and you know, you kind of think that the error is in the wrong place. And the idea was that this tool would help you figure out the right place where your error kind of bubbled up from, right? So that's one thing. Another thing is maybe errors that come from generated code. So now that we're using a bunch of macros to do things all over the place, you wind up with an error message from code that was generated by a macro, so it's kind of hard to debug it back to where it originally came from. And that's a different problem, and I don't think anybody's doing anything for that.
Okay.
But there was at least this one attempt to do this, it's called the type debugger. It's this attempt to try and figure out where your actual error is from, and I don't know what's going on with that. I think that it was tried, but I don't think we found a way to actually incorporate that into any compiler yet.
Okay, how did you get into Scala development, and were there other functional languages that you dabbled in or used before diving into Scala?
Completely accidentally.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is going to be an interesting story.
I was doing a PhD at EPFL in something totally different. And I accidentally kind of got into Scala because they were just in the same hallway as us. really. And so I was spending all of my time building this thing that should be, you know, a kind of parallel machine learning in MATLAB.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that everybody in my field was silly because they were trying to find like mathematical ways to like approximate solutions because they were too too complex, like kind of intractable to solve, right. You know, in general. So I was like, you silly people, I'll just, you know, parallelize things, no problem, it'll get done faster. But in the end, what I found that was really difficult, the Scala people were down the hall, and then I started trying to build a framework in Scala to parallelize things. And next thing you know, I started getting into building frameworks in Scala. So I was building stuff in MATLAB and then got really excited that Scala A was easier to do things concurrently or in parallel. And also that, you know, you have types, because if you've ever used a thing like MATLAB, you end up doing basically mathematically an incorrect thing because you don't have the right types, right? So
right.
You would like, you know, because you didn't transpose something, you have the wrong answer, but the code still runs, you know, and I found that frustrating. So
I played around, I took a machine learning course last year, and we were using Octave just because it was free,
mm-hmm.
but it,
yeah.
I think
free
it's like
version
a MATLAB
of MATLAB
clone.
Basically, yeah.
So yeah, I encountered that as
So debugging is not just, you know, weird runtime thing happening, but also like, is this mathematically correct? You know, did I do something silly? So I got excited because of the fact that most of my errors were actually caught by the type system, and then I kind of ended up building these frameworks in Scala after that. And I don't know, I'm now in the Scala community.
That's awesome. Do you feel functional programming is mainstream at this point, or do you feel it's always been mainstream?
I think it's mainstream now. Uh-huh. I mean, some definition of functional programming is mainstream. I actually don't even know what the proper definition is, and I think nobody can agree upon what exactly is functional programming.
I can't when people ask me. I'm like...
if the definition is higher order functions, and lambdas, or you know first class functions, mm-hmm. or at least functions of some kind that you can pass around, you know, I think that if that's the definition, then I think it's become a bit mainstream now. Yeah, and I think that, you know, people are really seeing the benefits of using higher order functions to deal with data, for example, as is demonstrated by Spark.
One last question, I promise. So if you don't mind me asking, just like, what is your advice to youth out there, and maybe women in particular, like in getting to STEM and tech careers, and as well, are there any side efforts around the Scala Center to try to reach out to that community and try to get more youth involved?
So on the Scala Center side of things, what we're trying to do right now is use some of the money that we're getting to, you know, in the future. We haven't, it was sort of, for this version of Scala Days, it was kind of too close to the center's founding to Scala Days happening, but next time around, we want to use some of the money that we're pulling in to try and, you know, give like travel grants to underrepresented groups. So women, but, you know, not just women, underrepresented groups, period. So we would hope to be able to do that in the next iteration. So stuff like that, just trying to get people into our community to see the stuff that's going on as a first step. But in general, if you're underrepresented, it doesn't matter what you are. Really, I think that the one thing that, you know, we have to all accept is that it's difficult to be, you know, an outsider, and both sides of the coin have to, like, both sides, outsiders and non-outsiders. So however you want to like differentiate these groups, you know, we all have to try to be a little bit more open-minded to the other existing. And for us, me as a woman, for the ones on the fringe, I think that the best thing that I've learned over these years of trying to fit into a community where I feel like I'm not part of it is to just be persistent, to continue to say, okay, well, that was a setback. That was more difficult than expected. They didn't listen to me, probably because I'm a woman, whatever, but maybe next time they'll hear me, you know, I'll try again. So the only thing that I think I've really sort of come to take away from this whole experience is that persistence when you're the minority is key. Eventually they're going to listen to you, you know, hopefully.
Right.
So keep trying.
Okay, that's awesome advice. So thank you for your time. You know, we're thrilled to have such great representation at ET from the Scala ecosystem, and we're going to be all at Scala Days. Chariot Solutions is going to be up there, so we're looking forward to your keynote there.
Oh, cool. Thank you. Thanks for having me. It was awesome. Fun.
Thank you so much.
Check out our website for more content over the coming months. We'll announce it via our Twitter handle, @ChariotSolution. But if you want to browse, you can hit chariotsolutions.com/techcast for all of our podcasts, chariotsolutions.com/blog for our blog page, and chariotsolutions.com/screencast for all of our ETE podcasts. InfoQ is also hosting a page at infoq.com/ETE. Sujan Kapadia, technology architect at Chariot Solutions, will be speaking about Scala at two upcoming events. On April 27th, he'll be speaking at the Reactive New York City meetup in New York City. His talk is titled, Don't Block on It, Migrate Your Codebase Before It's Too Late. On May 4th, he'll be at Philly Tech Week conducting a 3-hour Intro to Scala workshop entitled Intro to Scala, Fear No More. If you're up in New York City and interested in learning more about Chariot Solutions, reach out to Sujan at skapadia@chariotsolutions.com or on Twitter at Sujan Kapadia. That's SujanKapadia. Thanks again for listening to the TechCast, hosted by Ken Rimple, who is at KRimple on Twitter, and Becca Rufford, who is at BexRufford. Thanks for listening.